it's that most wonderful time of, well, the year and the day, or the moment when we get to talk to Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, the food maverick, the food, I don't know. Hi, Arthur, how are you?
I'm okay.
Okay. Fine. Is okay good under the circumstances?
It's good enough.
Which brings me to
my subject of the day. As I have gotten older and less likely to go out in a snowstorm to buy a head of cabbage, I've rediscovered frozen vegetables. Now, if you listen to this every week, you know already that I'm now enamored of frozen artichoke hearts. But I've now decided I also can't live without frozen peas in the freezer and some kind of frozen green. These are my top frozen vegetables. I feel that they're only, in the case of peas, frozen peas are better than fresh peas 99% of the time. Every once in a while, I come across some farm stand that has just picked peas, and they're good. But usually, and then you got to, you know, they're expensive too, by the way. And you hardly ever see peas that are worth eating in the produce section of the supermarket. But frozen peas, I've lived on frozen peas now for decades. And I have to say that in Italy, I hardly ever see anyone eat a fresh pea, whereas they eat a lot of frozen peas. And I do a lot with frozen peas. So the other one, the artichoke hearts, I have several things I do with frozen artichoke hearts. And spinach, I do keep spinach, but there's also kale is okay. In fact, I think kale benefits from being frozen. So, by the way, frozen vegetables are just as good for you, perhaps even have an edge nutritionally, because frozen vegetables are always picked when they're at their peak. And then frozen, so anything they may lose in the freezing process, they've gained from being at the peak of their nutritional value. There are a couple other frozen vegetables that I eat and I think, oh, this is not bad. Frozen corn. Ah. You eat frozen corn. Americans love frozen corn.
Marshall used to be the, well, look, frozen peas, if you have animals, they're really good to keep in the freezer just because, you know, you throw them on any wound.
You knock your knee or whatever.
Yeah, I'm talking about humans who happen to crash into things, and I am one of them. Frozen peas are a must in the freezer anyway.
Because they conform to whatever you put them on.
Exactly. So
whereas, spinach, well, I'm going to get to this in a second. This is
spinach,
important.
I just remember those blocks of spinach that you'd have to sit and shoot, basically.
Well, you defrost it.
Here's
the deal. I find there are a lot of vegetables now coming in those plastic bags, so you can use almost any of them as an ice pack. But you have to shop, picking frozen vegetables is a skill not quite as hard to learn as picking fresh vegetables. But still, you have to remember that unless they're kept frozen, they will somehow be diminished. And the only way to know if they've been kept frozen all through the supply chain is to feel them up. Meaning, if it's in a box, squeeze the box. If one end of the box feels a little less filled than the other end of the box, you know that at some point, this defrosted, the spinach compacted at one side of the box, and then it was refrozen.
Right.
In the case of things that are in bags, if you pick up a bag of peas, for instance, and they're not loose as they should be, then that bag maybe not was compromised somewhere along the line. Now, that said, we had this horrible, horrible supermarket literally around the corner, very convenient. However, things were so poorly stored that the store closed, and I think that's part of the reason is that you couldn't buy meat there or chicken there. And in the case of frozen vegetables, they were invariably compromised. Now I shop in a couple of other stores, and by the way, that store has now been replaced twice since it closed.
I don't know. You don't know this, or maybe you do, but many moons ago, I lived way downtown before there were supermarkets, and the first supermarket was the Food Emporium on Chambers Street. And otherwise, we went to New Jersey. But over on the east side, there were two diabolical, one Met Food and one Red Apple, and you wouldn't send your worst enemy in there to get something.
Well, let me just say, the man who owns Red Apple, I wouldn't send, you know who he is? I'm not going to go into it now. But politically, not who we want to he owns a radio station in New York. Anyway.
Well, maybe
so,
it's improved.
Let's go back to the frozen vegetables.
Yeah,
winter's coming. The reason I keep these in the freezer is there are nights where, you know, we've eaten everything else in sight, and it's time to, and we have no vegetables left. Because vegetables are, I don't freeze meat. I only have two small, I have two under-the-counter refrigerator freezers. The freezer boxes in both of them are very efficient but small. So in one is ice, got to have ice. And I throw in sometimes meat that I can't cook right away. That's basically the reason I would freeze meat is, I bought this 2 days ago. I better cook it or freeze it, so I freeze it. The other one has homemade broth, homemade chili, and frozen vegetables. So I keep them there because, you know, I wrote this book called What to Cook When You Think There's Nothing in the House to Eat. In those days, I wouldn't think of buying frozen vegetables. So there's nothing frozen in that book. It's all fresh stuff or things that you can keep in your pantry. And I wrote that, by the way, when I was living in West Cornwall and we didn't have a supermarket. We didn't even have the general store anymore.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, the times have changed. So also listen to this. You have to, if you're buying frozen vegetables, remember, it should be the last item you pick up in the supermarket.
Right.
You don't want to compromise them yourself by putting them in the basket right away, in the cart right away, and then taking another 10, 15 minutes to finish your shopping. And with me, it takes longer. So I always stop at the frozen food case last. And if you can get them to pack it that way, it's good to pack all the frozen things together in a paper bag because it sort of insulates, you know. So when you see me filling up boxes and bags of vegetables...
Don't
call the authorities.
No, but it's a very good point. And, you know, I dare say that, if you will, technique, for lack of a better term, shopping, you know, is one that has... It's something that was passed on and now is so robotized that...
So let's start with what do you do with all this frozen stuff? Well... You know, peas, listen, I'm not a huge fan of green peas, but Mr. Harned is, so I do make them frequently. And I always buy the little ones, petit pois.
Petit pois.
They are sweeter. And I do not like the big ones cooked very long, or even the small ones cooked very long. The peas have already been blanched so that they'll survive the freezing process. So, in fact, if you just defrost the peas, meaning let them, you know, melt, which doesn't take long and then at the very last minute you cook them, just for a few minutes, really, just for a few. And if you're cooking them just as a vegetable itself, literally a couple of tablespoons of water in a saucepan with the peas and put them over medium heat, literally for 2 minutes. And that's all I think they need. If you think they need more, go ahead. They get starchy, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree because I'm not Mrs. P, but you know that about me.
So being a pasta guy, I make several different styles of pasta and peas, pasta e piselli. And it depends on who you ask in Italy how to make this, then you're going to get a different recipe. So, and I make several different versions. If I have good pancetta in the fridge, I will I'm in the mood, I will dice up some pancetta, cook it out so that you get crispy bits of pancetta, and then throw the peas into the oil, and then throw in your cooked pasta with some pasta cooking water, and put in the peas, and that's it. Well, you can put the crisp bits of pancetta aside and put them on the top if you like. It's gonna have. You can do this with bacon, by the way, too, plain old American bacon. But I must warn you that American bacon has a lot more fat than Italian bacon / pancetta. So I would not use all the bacon fat rendered from even 3 slices of bacon to put on the peas. Personally, I like butter better. So, and it's easier, too. You melt some butter in a saucepan. You cook, by the way, pasta. Here's something. I can't seem to find large elbow macaroni, only because I want to make some old-fashioned macaroni and cheese. But for peas, I love shells because the peas get caught in the shells, the small shells, not big shells. Not tiny shells, either.
Right, the bigger ones.
Normal shells, I don't know how to call them.
Yeah, and I don't either, because then there are those massive shells. Remember stuffed shells, the massive ones that used to...
No, that's the stuffed shells.
Yeah, but what are those? What are they called?
Your normal, I don't know, that maybe 3/4 inch diameter shells.
Yeah, regular shells.
Ones that, you know, if you put a pea in it, it would look good.
Right.
So, yeah.
No,
anyway, but any pasta is good. I don't like heavy pasta. Like, I rigatoni every once in a while, but... I prefer a smaller pasta because they're usually a little thinner. So you just cook up your pasta, whatever it is. Not spaghetti, by the way, because the peas don't integrate well with spaghetti, with the long pasta. I'll give you an exception in a minute. So you some butter in the pan, throw in your peas, throw in the cooked pasta, some pasta cooking water, and a good few spoons of grated cheese. I like Parmigiano. You can use Pecorino, whatever you like, whichever you like. Could be whatever grating cheese you like. And that's it, salt and pepper. I mean, that is an easy supper. And you get your peas, which are not as high carb as I once thought they were. So even if you're watching carbohydrates, some peas won't hurt you. Another way, if I want to make more elaborate, and here might be an exception, I wouldn't use spaghetti, but I would use fettuccine, a wide-ish egg noodle. Or even, by the way, egg noodles, for that matter, is delicious this way, with just butter and cheese. But also, sauté a shallot, minced shallot in some butter. Throw in some strips of plain old cooked ham, whatever. I keep ham in the house these days. You know, a couple slices of cooked ham cut into very thin strips. Toss that around in the butter. Add the peas. Toss them around until they're just cooked. And then add some cream. I know, this is very decadent. I would say for a cup of peas, you want a half a cup of cream. And there's butter in there, too. So that is very decadent, but it's very delicious. Eat it with a lot of grated cheese. Now, also, sometimes I just say, oh, we have a meat thing, and we want peas. I have added peas to second-day stew. I've added peas, meaning... We eat the stew the way it is. Usually I make with carrots and parsnips and that's mainly, and potatoes. And then the second day, you can add peas. Also, if you have a ragu, ground meat pasta sauce, you can add them to that. In fact, there is in Sicily, mainly I think in Palermo, they make anelli, which is rings, pasta rings, mixed with a ground meat sauce, a ragu, and peas, and tiny cubes of they call it Caciocavallo, but it's different than the Caciocavallo of southern Italy. It's Sicilian cheese. Anyway, and cubes of this cheese, and then bake it in the oven. Usually you'll see it on a menu as pasta al forno, just baked pasta. It's so ubiquitous, this particular baked pasta, that in Sicily you just see it as baked pasta. Well, what other one there is? There are a lot of others. But that, I mean, even if you go to a steam table restaurant in Sicily, you'll find that. And it's a good steam table dish, by the way. It doesn't, it holds up long enough. So let's move on from peas for the moment to spinach.
Okay.
Now, I happen to love spinach, and even though I'm not a lover of cleaning salad, I don't mind cleaning spinach, which is even more tedious than salad. But I do, in the spring, clean huge amounts of spinach, because, of course, spinach, once you put it in the pot and cook it, cooks down to nothing. So a 10-ounce box of frozen spinach is probably equivalent to two bunches of spinach. Now, I know these days you can buy, even pre-washed, this baby spinach or this delicate leaf spinach, which I like well enough, but it's not the same as the full, crinkly leaf, heavy stem spinach. I take the stems off. It just doesn't have the flavor. And so but I do like the frozen spinach, which has more flavor than what they sell cleaned and in boxes, and maybe not, of course not, the same flavor as spring spinach. But it's still a great vegetable in a pinch. I defrost the spinach, squeeze out whatever moisture is in there, which usually is more than you think, and then break it up into a skillet in which I've heated some, I would say, smashed garlic. I don't mean put it through a press, but with the heel of my hand, I squash a couple cloves of garlic, put it in a pan with good olive oil and a hot pepper or a big pinch of hot pepper flakes, and cook that for literally a minute or two until the garlic starts sizzling a little bit. And then add the spinach all broken up. You're going to have to do it with your fingers. And you saute the spinach and salt. You're going to probably need some salt. You won't need pepper if you put hot pepper in the oil. And then again, if you don't like hot pepper, leave out the hot pepper, and later you can put in some black pepper. And that's it. Just saute. You don't have to cook this spinach. All you have to do is pretty much heat it through. And by the way, that to me is a great vegetable just like that. But I have in the past made eggs with it, too. It's good to do. I put it in meatloaf. You put some meat on the bottom, you put some sautéed spinach over the meat, and then you put the rest of the meatloaf mixture on the top. It becomes like a stuffed meatloaf. Anyway, the spinach is also good with pasta. Need I say that?
Yes.
Whatever macaroni you want, you'll have to add some pasta cooking water and maybe some more olive oil. And also, kale is a very good frozen vegetable, and I do keep that around every once in a while, I think, to buy it, because I do like making, and this is something with ingredients that you can keep, a soup of kielbasa, which is the sausage that I use for this, but if you have, you can get other kinds of sausage, and chorizo is good, and you simmer it in some water with a couple of cloves of garlic, and add kale and potatoes. And, by the way, and the meat, either sliced or diced. And then kale and potatoes. Really good winter. In the middle, especially when you think you have nothing in the house to eat, as my book says. Anyway, by the way, it's not just... one of the things I've just taken to keeping in the freezer is frozen grapes. It's a treat kind of dessert. Grapes are very sweet, and it's almost like eating sorbet if they're frozen. So, artichokes.
Artichokes.
Now, I have bought several. I don't usually recommend brands, but in the last year or so, I bought several brands of artichoke, frozen artichoke hearts.
Right.
And the best, I would say by far, are the ones from from Whole Foods, their own brand, which is called 365. Now, there are other artichoke hearts around, and if I didn't have these to compare others to, I would probably like the others as well. I remember I used to cook frozen a bird's eye, frozen artichoke hearts all the time. And then in those days, I was a butter guy, so I used to defrost them, put them in a skillet, cut side down in some sizzling butter. In those days, being very French, I would cover them with a piece of parchment paper that was also buttered. They were pretty buttery in the end, as you can imagine. Nowadays, I'm more of an olive oil guy, and I do like the taste of olive oil and artichokes. And I may say that sometimes you will see olive oil itself described as having an artichoke flavor.
Right.
And I happen to have some of my friend Cecilia's new olive oil, meaning it was just harvested probably a month ago. It does have a background taste of artichokes. So the olive oil and artichokes were made to be together. And in the case of the frozen artichokes, I do usually defrost them. The other day, I decided I didn't have time to defrost them. So I just put them in the skillet with some olive oil, just enough to skim the bottom of the skillet, and a couple of cloves of smashed garlic. And I covered the pan so that they could sweat in their own moisture for a few minutes while I peeled and cut up a potato. I think I must have used, for the 12 ounces of artichokes, which is a whole bag of artichokes, I used 2 medium potatoes, and I'm guessing that that was 10 to 12 ounces itself. I was extending the artichokes, it's true, but we really do love the potatoes cooked this way. So you cut up the potatoes in not big pieces. Let's say, I don't know, each potato I cut in half, and then in half again, and then crosswise into maybe 6 pieces. So they were maybe inch cubes. And you put that in and toss it around with the oil and the artichokes, which have now given up some moisture. After all, they were frozen. And cover the pan again, salt and pepper. Cover the pan again and let them cook over low heat, sort of stewing in their own juices with the potatoes until the potatoes get quite tender. By that time, certainly the artichokes will be tender. And it usually takes 15, 20 minutes over very low heat. Use a point of a knife to test the potatoes. And I season that with, besides the garlic, which is subtle, season that with dried mint. I don't keep fresh mint in the house, so if I had fresh mint, I'd use fresh mint. But I always have good dried mint because I do some Middle Eastern cooking. And it's a nice flavor, even though it's sort of an edge of the Middle East for me. Anyway.
I don't know. It all sounds.
I'm about to try, and I'll report on it one of these days. I'm about to try frying the artichoke hearts in a batter and not in a batter. What do you think? I was considering doing that for Hanukkah, given it was frying food, but I never got around to it. Now Hanukkah's over.
Well, you'll have to report on it. If I'm calculating correctly, I think we have. Once again, exceeded our remit here.
We have exceeded. I'm looking at the clock, and you don't interrupt me, so I keep going.
And I didn't stop you, but I think it's I'm interested in how your both tastes and program has changed. Over the years, i.e., butter to olive oil, etc. Not because I'm an anti, just because.
Well, you know, it's now I have access to great olive oil.
Right.
That could be part of it.
Sure. And that makes all the difference, which always brings me back to what I want to talk about is, hey, how do we convey to people the difference between Dreck and great olive?
Well, you've got to be able to taste
day.
It. But I went to a restaurant. I have to say that my last half dozen restaurant experiences were incredibly disappointing, including the last one, which is an old-fashioned Italian-American place that I remember fondly from my youth. And it was terrible, and and the first indication that it was going to be terrible is they came over with this little dish of, I don't even think it was olive oil. It was some kind of oil with some kind of vinegar, with some kind of dried herbs in it. And they say it's Italian. All right, I've gone over my time.
That's all right. We love you.
See next week.
Have a good week. And
happy holiday, everybody.
Back at you. Thank you so much, Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. And we will talk to you soon.